Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
When it comes to the NFL, nobody knows jack. We just don't. Because everything changes from week to week. I mean, weren't we just talking about Kansas City running the table? Like 5 minutes ago, we were talking about that. Now they've dropped two straight at home. Their quarterback is banged up. Their defense cannot get the hell off the field. And they're only a half game up on the Raiders in the AFC West. Kansas City played a really weird game yesterday. How weird? Patrick Mahomes threw for 116 yards on the opening drive. I said it. 116 yards on the opening drive and had 41 yards in the second half. And it only gets more bizarre. They had a 17-3 lead at the end of the first quarter, and they trailed 23-17 going into halftime thanks to the fact that they could not stop Deshaun Watson on this play late in the second quarter.
Texans looking for the lead. Watson circles, flag down. Watson has got the angle for the touchdown. Deshaun Watson does it himself.
So they couldn't stop him late in the second quarter, and it would stand to reason. If they can't stop that guy late in the second quarter, there is no way they're stopping him late in the fourth.
Fake the give. Watson has options here. Watson, the shake and bake, the twirl for the touchdown. Deshaun Watson puts the Texans in front.
And the only people who had a worse time than Kansas City fans watching that game were Bears fans watching that game because they were watching two guys that they could have had instead of Mitch Trubisky. How'd that go for you, Bears fan? I'm guessing pretty horribly. And speaking of how things have changed over the last couple of weeks, how about we all put a little respect on Kirk Cousins? He had taken plenty from the media, from his teammates, even his coach. Hey, rightfully so, though. He wasn't doing what they brought him in and paid him hellify jack to do. Consistently make big plays and win big games. A former teammate even said that he was the weakest link in that offense going into yesterday's game with Philadelphia. So with everybody coming for this guy, when he absolutely had to have it, he shows out in a huge bounce back game yesterday. I'm like, nobody cared what this guy did against the Giants. Everybody wanted to see him do it against somebody who mattered. Somebody like the Eagles. So he did this.
Cousins, first down, going deep for Diggs. He makes the catch. Stephon Diggs, touchdown. 62 yards.
Was that so hard? I mean, that's what they brought that guy there to do. To let it rip, take advantage of his weapons downfield. And he did. And then he chased that with this.
At their 49-yard line. Play action. Cousins. Diggs. He's got it. Touchdown. 51 yards.
Now you see why Diggs was making so much noise about get me the ball. Get me the ball. And then Cousins did this.
Play action. Cousins to the end zone.
Now, if you're going to make some noise about not getting the ball, and then they find a way to get you the ball, you better make those plays. And he did. And so did Cousins. 334 yards, four touchdowns, one INT, and some happy receivers who finally got the rock. And some breathing room for Cousins himself, and maybe even a new game plan going forward. Now, back to that former teammate who cracked him coming into the game. That would be Eagles linebacker Zach Brown, who played with Cousins in Washington in 2017. Coming into the game, he said that Cousins was, quote, probably the weakest part, end quote, of the Vikings offense. I mean, that's a hell of a line to drop, right? A hell of a line to drop from a former teammate, and if you're going to drop it, you better back it up. You better not get torched by the guy that you called the weakest part of the offense. Of course, knowing Kirk Cousins and the kind of fuel he runs on, he was not going to take that bait. No, instead, he took the high road like you knew he would after the game.
I really do stay ignorant, not read anything, and that's for my best interest. But Zach was a teammate in Washington. He's one of the better linebackers I've played with or against. I have a lot of respect for him. And, you know, if you're trying to write a story about how I was a motivator this week, it wasn't because I didn't know about it.
You like that?
This guy's like, oh, wait, he said I sucked? Oh, I love that guy. That's my dude right there. That's one of my favorite guys. Hey, look, I'm guessing Cousins knew exactly what had been said by people inside his locker room, outside of his locker room, pretty much everywhere else. He knew he needed a big game, and he got it, and he shut everybody up, including Brown, in the process, at least for another week. And for at least a week, the Vikings were who we thought they were. But so are the Redskins and the Dolphins, unfortunately. And then you have the Niners, who, coming off a statement win over Cleveland on Monday night, made another when they came to L.A. on a short week against a desperate Rams team at home who had extra time to prepare, and the Niners still knocked them the hell out. That 20-7 beatdown was a straight hospital job and not nearly as close as the final score indicates. By the way, are we even sure that game was played in L.A.? Are we even sure that game was played here in L.A.? Because they looked, sounded, and felt like they were at a Niners home game. Niner fan took over their house, made himself right at home. Essentially helped himself to anything and everything he wanted. So suddenly now the Rams are spiraling, having lost three in a row for the first time under Sean McVay, and a banged up Niners team that's only going to get better when it gets healthy, suddenly looks not only like the team to beat in the division, but maybe in the NFC overall. And here's something else that has not changed as part of our rundown. The fact that any idiot who said Lamar Jackson should play wide receiver still owes everybody an apology. I mean, at this point, that should be a weekly thing, because no take was worse at that time and even worse a year and a half later than that take. You know, the guy who should be playing receiver or running back, allegedly, just went for 236 yards in the air and 152 on the ground and a TD against the Bengals. And no, I don't care how crappy the Bengals are. That is an epic performance. Of all the dual-threat quarterbacks who have ever played in the NFL, you know how many players in league history have thrown for more than 200 yards and rushed for more than a buck and a half in a game? One. Colin Kaepernick. That's it. But yeah, go ahead. Tell me that Lamar Jackson would be better off as a wide receiver or a running back. Oh, one more thing that has not changed. Atlanta's brutal week of sports. Like, that's a city that has endured some rough weeks in sports, but maybe nothing like the past 7 days. It started with St. Louis smashing them in Game 5 of the NLDS. Then number 3, Georgia, favored by 24.5 at home, lost to unranked South Carolina. And then this from the Falcons yesterday.
Ryan on to tie the game. The ball is down. The kick is up. And he missed it. He missed it wide to the left. Oh, my goodness. Bryant ripped his helmet off. He can't believe it as he walks dejected back to the Falcon sideline. Arizona 34, Atlanta 33 with a minute 53 to go.
Broham. You missed that point after. You best leave that bonnet on. Uh-oh! Man, that's rough. Here's a guy who had missed 3 extra points in the previous 11 seasons and just picked the worst time imaginable to miss number 4. Can't put it all on him, but that has to hurt. And for all you Matt Ryan haters, kind of hard to pin that one on him, right? He went 30 of 36 with 4 touchdowns, no picks, and still lost. I don't even know that was possible. But instead of dumping on the Falcons, man, how about some love for the Cardinals? Kyler Murray, 372 total yards and 3 touchdowns for the win. His second straight win. Second straight game with more than 300 total combined yards. So lots of things are changing. And then some things are not. Like Jason Garrett. He is still the Cowboys head coach. That could change, though. And he's going to get his own take. That's how bad that was. Because that's what you get when you're a desperate team riding a 2-game losing streak, going up against a winless team with a quarterback coming back from mono, and you still get cracked. That's what you get. You get your own take. Oh, and one last thing. Honorable mention to the officials who just about wrecked another weekend and now are halfway to wrecking the game completely. We still have no idea what a catch is. Pass interference has never been more confusing. The rule changes made it worse, not better. And the game is virtually unwatchable at this point. I get that their gig is tough. and that cracking the officials is the easiest thing ever. But this is bad. Really bad. Like replacement ref bad. Hey clones, what do we want when we're craving protein or we need some more energy? I'll tell you what we don't want. Not a bar, not a sugary snack, and certainly not an energy drink. No, we want beef, pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your pop's jerky. Shriveled, dry, tasteless. Nope. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender, it's tasty, it's not tough. So why is it so good? It's because of the company. Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for its relentless commitment to quality. In other words, they take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors, and it's quality smoked meat at its finest that goes wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you, clones. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky comes close. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
After further review, the play stands as called.
This one may get reversed.
First and 10, Atlanta on the 36.
There's some confusion on the field.
12 men in the huddle, 5-year penalty.
How can the kicking team block in the back?
We also have a dead ball, personal foul, number 93. Red.
Don't understand that one either.
St. Louis gets the ball.
Clock was not running. They were not charged with that timeout.
That's not true, Sam. That's not true.
You can't make this stuff up.
Wilford took his helmet off and went screaming right for the official.
Oh, boy. Well, that's a few bucks.
Never meant any disrespect or be disrespectful to the officials.
One guy goes up, touchdown. The other said no time.
How does MD Jennings not get credit for the intercept?
How can they take that away?
Follow the field stands. Touchdown.
Touchdown.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
Seriously. Were those clowns brought back? Because at this point, I really cannot tell the difference. And neither can anybody else. He is Charles Davis. Charles, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing well. And if I might add, a happy birthday to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Charles. I appreciate that. That's great of you to say. All right, so you were in Minnesota for the Eagles and Vikings yesterday. And the Vikings had struggled in the passing game early in the season. Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs were clearly frustrated by things. When you watch Kirk Cousins over the course of the season, what kind of quarterback did you see coming into yesterday?
Well, I saw a guy that, you know we overuse terms, Jim? I mean, let's face it, when buzzwords hit, we take them and beat them into the ground, right?
Sure.
So when a quarterback really takes care of the football but doesn't really press things, right, you don't get a lot of offense, you get good numbers, but at the end of the game you walk away going, but what did he actually do? We use the term risk averse, don't we?
Right.
And that's what you thought of with Kirk in a lot of cases. Now, I've seen him push it before. We did a game of his with Washington at Seattle a couple of seasons ago, and late in the game pushed it downfield to Josh Dotson and won an improbable game, but not enough of that, right? His record against above 500 teams, against teams in top 10 on defense, all those are negative numbers for him. But after the firestorm of Stephon Diggs not showing up for meetings, getting fined $200,000, after Adam Thielen's post-game comments where when you saw it in total, you knew it wasn't a rip at his quarterback, but really how are we running on offense? But his bottom line is that's how it was taken. We've seen a different Kirk Cousins the last 2 weeks, and I think part of that has to go to, or I should, part of the congratulations have to go to Kevin Stefanski and the offensive staff, their offensive coordinator. They got aggressive, Jim, and they said, we're going to push it a little bit more. You need to come along. And Kirk Cousins did. And look at the Giants game. Okay, great. So we can discount that because the Giants weren't that great on defense. This past week against Philadelphia, who had 10 sacks the week before against the Jets team, who just beat Dallas. They took their shot. He fit the ball into some tight windows. He threw the ball deep, and boy, did they have a game. And I think they're going to try and play that way the rest of the season because Mike Zimmer, their defensive coordinator slash head coach, or should I say head coach slash defensive coordinator, he's gotten more aggressive on his defensive calls as well. That Vikings team has a different vibe to it.
Charles Davis joining us. He actually gave me to my next point. I was going to say, it's one thing to do it against the Giants because, as you point out, Charles, everybody said, great, that's the Giants. Do it against somebody who matters. Do it against somebody like Philadelphia. And then he did that. So to your point, pick that up. Is this something you expect them to carry throughout the season, or do you still have questions?
No, he should carry it throughout the season, Jim, because if he doesn't, to your point, the questions will still be out there because the questions are going to remain all the way through the rest of the year. You know that after all these years that Kirk has played, he's still in a prove-it stage to people, right? You don't erase a well below 500 record against good teams with a couple of ball games. He has to do it consistently. The Vikings have to show up in the playoffs. He's got to consistently beat good teams, he and his team. But I like where they're going offensively. Remember, Kevin Stefanski is a first-year offensive coordinator, but they married him up with Gary Kubiak as a consultant. And Kevin was all on board for that because he knows Clint Kubiak and he knew Gary. And that is starting to work for them. The running with Cook, throwing it to other people. The kicker is it felt like a firestorm, and, you know, with all these receivers complaining. And Kyle Rudolph, and you know him, Jim, he's one of the nicest guys in the league. I teased him, and I told Cousins, and I told Kirk to his face. I teased Rudolph and said, hey, you ought to go ahead and complain about not getting the ball and tell Kirk right. to come in on his podcast. And maybe you'll get a few balls thrown to you. And we all got a kick out of it. But look at the last 2 weeks. Thielen says something. Last week he gets seven balls, 130 yards, two touchdowns. Diggs misses the meetings and the whole deal. This week, he's the primary guy. I told Rudolph, you better get on board, dude. You're going to get left behind.
That's funny.
These guys are getting all the passes.
I like that. Charles Davis joining us. All right, so where does that leave Philadelphia? They've had an up-and-down season. They beat the Packers in Lambeau, but they lost to the Falcons. They were blown out by the Vikings. And now you've got Doug Peterson, who already called a shot. He said Philadelphia is going to go to Dallas on Sunday night, quote, and we're going to win that football game. Look, Charles, it should come as no shock that a head coach expects to win a game. But what do you make of him making a public statement like that?
I think he's trying to show his team that he's confident in them. I think he's trying to show his team that hey, look, we've had our ups and downs, and you know the Philadelphia media, and you know how the fans are. My best example is this team won a Super Bowl, what, two seasons ago, right?
Right.
They made it to the playoffs last year despite a ton of injuries and a backup quarterback again. They still are in first place in their division, and I ran into a person where I was going to work out, and she's like, oh, my God, the Eagles, they're a disaster. That's what you're dealing with there. So I think he's trying to pump up his team a little bit, let him know that he still has faith in them, he still has confidence. I did not like the fake field goal call right before the half, but that is emblematic of who Doug Peterson is, that he's going to push the envelope, he's going to go, and he'll be unapologetic about it. I just think that for Philadelphia now, the one thing they have to keep in mind for a team that wants to press it is that everyone knows that's their M.O. Like, if I'm on field goal block or punt return and I'm playing Philadelphia, Jim, I'm not rushing unless the game's on the line. Because I'm going to play them for a fake every time because that's kind of where they are. They are the type of team that will do that. And I would, at this point, I just want the football or I want to see him miss the field goal. That's all I'm looking for. Because when you rush them, when you do other things, that's when they can sting you with their trick plays. Minnesota was well aware of that, and they were so ready for the fake field goal. I went back and looked at it on the way home. Anthony Harris is the safety. He pretty much ran to the receiver because he was locked in on it and he didn't care about whether they kicked it or not.
They knew. Charles Davis joining us for a few more moments. All right, so if Peterson's right in what he says and he guarantees that win and they win that game, and then yep. Dallas ends up losing four in a row after winning their first three, what leave them and specifically Jason Garrett?
Ooh! If we think the sky falls in Philly, it does the same thing in the big sky in Texas too. And I really believe that Jerry Jones and his family and Will McClay, the personnel guy, I know they believe in Jason Garrett. But he did not get the contract extension. All right? They're kind of making him, you know, sing for his supper, so to speak. I think Jason has embraced that challenge. But they were struggling on offense yesterday. But you remember, both tackles didn't play. Okay? The other side of that is, to me, is the defense, Jim. That defense should be dominant in a lot of cases. I don't feel like they've played up to that level, especially in recent weeks. So Dak's getting all the attention, you know, after the 3-0 start. His numbers aren't the same, blah, blah, blah. All of that is true. I think if you look at the defensive side of the ball, they've given up too many big plays, and they're not as dominant as you might expect in the run game. So that's where things have to jump up, because you talk about Leighton Van Der Esch, you talk about Jalen Smith, a defensive front like Malik Collins doesn't get a lot of attention, but boy, is he tough inside. People shouldn't be able to run the ball the way that they have, and those big plays are giving up on the perimeter. That would be of concern to me. Chidobe Awuzie has had a couple of those in recent weeks.
He is an NFL Network analyst. He is an NFL on Fox analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at CFD22, and a good friend of the program, my man Charles Davis. Charles, so good to have you back. I appreciate that. Thanks for starting us off.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim. Again, enjoy your birthday hanging out with knuckleheads like me. I appreciate that, and we'll talk down the road.
My man, you're the best. Did you know 1 out of 4 batteries are going to fail this winter? So you want to get yours tested for free during Superstart Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If your battery does need to be replaced, O'Reilly has the Superstart battery for you. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So let's talk Cowboys for a minute. After dropping back-to-back games to Super Bowl contenders, yesterday's game against the Jets was supposed to be the ultimate get-right game for the Cowboys. They had just lost tough games to the Saints and the Packers, but now they had the Jets, a winless team that had been outscored 101-39. I mean, sure, New York was getting their franchise quarterback back from that enlarged spleen, but when the offense had been averaging 4.25 points per game, how much was that really going to matter? And if there was ever a game to get the offense rolling and let the defense eat, it was this game. Spoiler alert, no, it wasn't. Instead of working the Jets, they got worked by the Jets. And Jason Garrett got worked by Adam Gase. The crazy clapper got worked by Crazy Eyes himself. They didn't just lose to the Jets. They were down 21-3 in the first half. And it was embarrassing. The Jets were doing things like this.
Play clock at 5. Darnold, play action, drops the throw, steps up, puts a bomb up the right seam, looking for Anderson. He's got it at the 50, at the 40. They're not going to catch him. He's going to go the distance. 10, 5, touchdown. Sam Darnold dials it up to Robbie Anderson. 92 yards, and the Jets have widened their lead.
Jets radio. Man, that is so embarrassing. Almost as embarrassing as Dallas needing a second-half comeback to make it a game. And then this two-point conversion to tie it up.
Prescott back in the gun, throws it in the end zone, incomplete, and there are no flags anywhere. And he was bowled over. They knocked Prescott on his backside before literally he had a chance to throw. They brought a blitzer up the middle who was unaccounted for, Jamal Adams. And that ball never had a chance. And the Cowboys are going to come up short by 2 points.
Right. Cowboys radio. I mean, honestly, if you're a Cowboys fan, it might be better that you lost that game. And everybody has to wear it. Instead of somehow escaping with a win. And then just erasing it. Because then you start to convince yourself of a lot of things that just are not true. Namely, you were ready to play that game. Because they weren't. Namely, that you are an elite team. When they're not. Namely, that it's a team with a lot of grit and toughness, when they're not that either. Not if they're wounded, desperate for a win, and facing league-wide embarrassment, and they still get choked out when they lose to the Jets. You are who your record says you are, and I'm talking about the last 3 weeks, not the first 3 weeks. Not when you got fat against some scrubs and were walking around like you were Super Bowl caliber. Come to find out that was a mirage. That was fool's gold. That was a lie. Because this is brutal. I mean, sure, the offense was missing its left tackle and right tackle and Randall Cobb before the game. And losing Amari Cooper during the game did not help. Same with all the guys who were going down on defense. But it's a Cowboys team that was hyping its depth. I don't want to hear about injuries. Nobody ever does in the NFL, but especially from a team that only a couple weeks back was going on and on about how deep they are, hyping their own depth. And more important than all of that was what they had, namely the Jets standing right in front of them. You tell me, what's worse, that the Cowboys defense could not get pressure on Sam Darnold, or that the Jets got a ton of pressure on Dak Prescott, and that Prescott took some serious hits? I would say everybody has to wear that, but in this case, they really don't. In this case, it's really only one guy. Only one guy and no names mentioned. The Clapper, Jason Garrett. Because his team was not ready to play. His team cannot be beaten by that opponent or that coach. Not if you want to be considered a Super Bowl team or even a playoff team. My man Jason LaCanfora reported before the game that Jerry Jones was, quote, very intrigued, end quote, by Lincoln Riley. I'd say by halftime that very intrigued by Lincoln Riley probably had been upgraded to here's a blank check, Link. Fill it in. Lincoln Riley could walk into that Cowboys facility today, ice cold, knowing almost nothing about that roster, and still get more out of the Cowboys in their next game than Garrett did yesterday. If Jarrah could have gotten Riley for the second half, he would have. Man, gas up Cowboy 1. Send it to Norman. Send the Clapper packing. But of course, afterwards, Jones was not in the mood to talk about firing the Clapper.
I'm going to be very trying. I was a lot happier with what he had done the first three games than what's happened the last three games. But the big thing I want to say is not just him.
So I'm going to be very trite and say that I was much happier with him after the first three games than the last three games. All right, Jarrah, getting warm. What else you got, Pops?
If you really look at it, you can't take one thing. It can be a list of 15 things. And with some having more of an emphasis on maybe the player, execution, mistakes, breaks, all of those kinds of things. Across the board, we did not play well enough to win. Had we been able to tie this thing up or win that thing at the end, it wouldn't be because that we played well. You guys would be writing about a team that did not play well, that won a game. Instead, you're writing about a team that usually happens to you when you don't play well.
Damn, man. That is some serious word salad. Word salad. Is that like some kind of filibuster? Like if you just keep talking and talking and talking, we'll forget what the question is? I have a question. Was your team ready to play? No. Who is that on? The coach? Right. There's your answer. Oh, and let's not forget this. Jason Garrett is in the final year of his contract. That team has got a lot of talent. And that same team just lost to the Jets. I'm not saying that one game should determine a coach's fate. But if that was ever the case, it was yesterday. And it was the Cowboys losing to the Jets. And for all that talk from Jerry Jones about how it could be one of 15 things, that it's not Garrett's fault, here's a key tweet from Calvin Watkins, who covers the Cowboys for the Dallas Morning News. Quote, Jerry Jones looks shaken. Of course he looks shaken. That's the look of a man who just got punked by the Jets. And his team was exposed as fraudulent. I mean, that could not have gone any worse than it did for him, for them, and for the Clapper. Beaten by the Jets in prime time. That's the look of a guy who is always the last one to know, who's walking around like he knows everything at all times. But finally figured out that they're not going anywhere with the Clapper. Not with the Clapper leading from the front. Like for years, there have been two constants in the NFL. No matter what happens, these two things never change. The Patriots are going to the AFC Championship game, and no matter what happens, Jason Garrett will not get fired. The Garrett was essentially unfireable. The bond between Jarrah and the Clapper has been so strong, it didn't matter how badly the team played or how horrible things went. Jason can keep right on clapping and keep right on working. Like, the guy who could not wait to run off Jimmy Johnson could not wait to keep Jason Garrett. The Clapper has been bulletproof for years. He just walks around in Teflon, clapping and smiling, clapping and smiling. But it feels like that's finally going to change. It feels like that time is finally starting to run out. Listen, and I need a break, but let me just make this point. I'm not looking to get anybody fired. I'm not looking to take food off of anybody's table, ever. I'm just saying that Jason Garrett is entering Jay Gruden's, if the key works Monday, keep working, territory. My man should feel very fortunate that that key still worked this morning, because it would not have been a surprise if it didn't. And even though Jarrett does not like to make moves like this in season, another day like yesterday, and there's no way the Clapper's key is going to work next week. Chase Edmonds is my guest. Chase, good to have you on. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. Appreciate you for having me, man.
Man, it's great to have you. Appreciate you, too. So what's it feel like to wake up on Monday after getting a big win on a Sunday?
Oh, man, it's a night and day difference. You know, everything's better when you're winning. And I think, you know, one thing we did really well offensively was just find ways to capitalize in the red zone. And, you know, we got a saying here, just move on Monday. You know, win, lose, or draw. You look at the tape Monday, and then you get ready for the next opponent. So we just got to get ready for New York.
Chase Edmonds joining us. All right, so a number of moments I want to hit you up on from yesterday's game. But take me back to third and goal early in the second quarter. You caught that pass out of the backfield. You scored. Can you take me through the play? What did you see on it, and how good did it feel to finish that play?
Yeah, just a great design play by Cliff, as always, man. It was a two-man read, so Kyler's going to go to the corner first. We had Charles Clay on the corner route, and if Kyler likes the corner route, he's throwing it to Charles. And then we had a drag by the other tight end we knew they were in man, so we had a drag by the tight end, so Deion Jones, who had me in coverage, had to go over the top. And Kyler it's a 1-2 read. If he doesn't like the corner, he goes to the swing route on me, and I just got to do a race to the pylon.
Now, I love hearing about this offense. I want to ask you more about that specifically in a minute. Chase Edmonds, my guest. Then later in the second quarter, you get a pass around the line of scrimmage. You take it for a 31-yard gain. What did you see on that play?
Right. Well, you know, we tried to do a little quick tunnel screen to me. Trent Sherfield had a great block on the cornerback. And when I got the ball, I forget if it was Adrian. I think it was Adrian Claiborne, their DN. He did a pretty good job of sniffing out the screen. So I tried to just cram it inside just because he was right on my hip. And I ended up just breaking the tackle and, you know, kept my feet turning and then just got it upfield and got as many yards as I could on that.
Chase Edmonds joining us. So you guys go up on them 27-10 in the second half, but Atlanta comes back. You knew they probably had a run in them. They try to tie it in the fourth quarter. Then you guys, when they do, in fact, you guys score with just over 5 minutes to go up 34-27. Then they score again. They go for the point after. What were you thinking in those moments? And then what was your reaction when they missed that kick?
Well, I mean, you know, in the moments, you kind of just see from the sideline. You see Matt Ryan, man, he started to get going. And that tremendous receiving core that they have over there at Atlanta, man, they started to get going. It's really hard to stop them. And, you know, our credit to our defense, though, man, they just tried to bend but not break. And, I mean, I remember when the extra point was going on when they tied the game, I was basically just, you know, getting ready for kickoff return. It was like, all right, man, we got to go out here and win this football game, you know, two-minute situation and do it just how we did it last week against Cincinnati. And, you know, when the extra point missed, I was shocked just like everybody else. And we had to get a hands team on the field and, you know, just make sure we execute.
Chase Edmonds joining us. You know, so if you go back to that go-ahead drive, you were hyping David Johnson after the game for how he put the team on his back.
Oh, yeah.
You call him Big Bro. You know, the thing is, a lot of guys in your position might not be hyping him as much as you do because it means you might get less action, but that does not seem like the case at all between the two of you. How much do the two of you feed off each other and make each other better?
Right. I think, man, this is a team effort, first and foremost. It's a team sport, and everybody is important. Everyone has a unique role in this offense and in this team, and you just got to find ways to appreciate everybody's role. That's what good teams really do. And I just called Dave Big Bro, man, just because before I even got to the NFL, you know, I was the FCS running back. I remember watching David Johnson his rookie year just and his second year, you know, just saying like, man, that's my role model because I want to get to where he is. He was an FCS running back, not a household name, and he was making big-time plays, you know. And it's just full circle. Now I'm here. I'm his teammate. And I just try to go out there and make the plays that I can make. But ultimately, man, it's a team effort. And I think we feed off of each other very well. We help each other out, especially when we're on the field, man, together. It's just I think it creates big mismatches for defenses just because if I motion out or Dave motions out, we still have that threat of either running the football or both of us getting out in open field receiving the ball.
We're talking Arizona Cardinals, Chase Edmonds. You know, back to your point that it is a team sport and that everybody's got to play their specific role and everybody's got a unique role. So how much does it mean to you to be playing the role that you're playing and contributing at the level that you are on a team that's now winning?
Right. I mean, it's huge, man. It's huge for my confidence. I tell people every time, you know, my goal coming into this year was just to, you know, really make a name for myself in this league. You know, I'm a second-year player, just still trying to find my role and just in terms of what type of player I'm going to be in this league. And it's tremendous for my confidence to go out there and make the plays. You know, I always have a saying of just do more with less, you know. So whether I have 10 touches, 5 or 6, you know, just find ways to positively impact the offense in the game.
I like that. Do more with less. We're talking to Chase Edmonds. So what's it been like playing for Cliff Kingsbury and learning his scheme?
Oh, I love it, man. You know, Cliff, he's going to be a great play caller for the NFL. And he's one thing I love about Cliff is he just found ways to adjust and he's found ways to really find what his playmakers do best and put us in a position to be successful. You know, you look at the first 2-3 weeks of the season where we were struggling in the red zone. He got back to the drawing board. You know, last 2 weeks we've been able to finish now a little bit more. And he's a great coach, man. He's so unique, and he's really creative. You know, I tell people all the time, every week we come into the office on Monday, we got 10, 15 new plays already dialed up for us that we got to get ready to install.
Chase Edmonds joining us. Chase, what's it been like playing with Kyler Murray?
Oh, man, it's truly, you know, it's great to watch him just develop as a quarterback, man. I tell people, you know, he's special, and he's going to be special. And sometimes just watching Kyler play, you forget that he's a rookie. You know, he's really taking command of the offense, and he's getting so much more he's better with his decision-making with the football. You know, you've seen a couple plays yesterday where he's learned now just to, when the play's not there, throw it out of bounds, throw it to the dirt, lift the fight another day, get on with it, and go to the next play, man. And you already know what he can do with his feet and his when he improvises out of the pocket. And it's great to see. You know, he's had a couple throws this year where I'm just like, wow, man, you know, he's special. And we got to continue, obviously, to keep him up on his feet, you know, not have pressure getting in his face, let him be comfortable back there and do what he does.
Yeah, so you play with him and you forget he's a rookie. Damn, Chase, talking to you, I forget that you're a second-year guy just talking to you. Listen, you like to watch a lot
that.
Of football, and
oh,
you study
yeah.
a lot of teams. You've said it feels like this offense is almost a faster, more shotgun-oriented version of Sean McVay's offense with the Rams. Lay that out for me. What do you mean by that?
Well, just a little bit. You know, Cliff, he'll be the first one to tell you that he's a copycat in terms of he takes certain plays from certain teams that he might find out throughout the weeks, and he just finds unique ways to put them in. But I said that yesterday just because, you know, we started doing a lot of motion, and it really messes with the defense's eyes. We got a couple receivers where we can do jet sweeps to keep them honest, so it's really helping our run game out a lot. And the way we're hitting a couple crossing routes, you know, that's something that McVay and the Rams love to do. And, you know, Cliff, man, like I said, he's a great play caller, and he's a great schemer. And, you know, every week, we really, you know, some of our plays just come from different teams from across the league where we just find ways to put in our playbook, and we find ways to implement it and, you know, go out there and execute it on Sundays.
You know, Chase, you mentioned confidence. Let me ask you this, because at the very top I mentioned you're the pride of Fordham, and your first 3 years in college were dominant, but you did battle some injuries your senior season, and people seem like they forgot about you. So when you arrived at the Combine, you were telling people that you were looking to dominate. What was your mindset at that point, and how valuable was that confidence?
Man, I just had urgency, man. You know, I had a disappointing senior year just because of some injuries, and I just felt forgotten about, and I really felt like my whole world was crashing down. So kind of felt like my back was against the wall just because, you know, I had goals of breaking the NCAA record of, you know, most rushing yards and everything like that going into my senior year. And, you know, things didn't work out that way. So I just really just tried to, you know, put my head down and just grind every single day and just prove people wrong and prove myself right that I was able to play in this league and dominate in this league.
All right, so you're putting some pressure on yourself, and you had this great sense of urgency. When you were drafted by the Cardinals, what do you remember about that moment when your dream became a reality?
Biggest blessing, man. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, what I thought was one of my worst moments in my senior year of that injury, God turned it in my favor. You know, my mother had ended up moving out to Arizona before the draft anyways to be closer to my sister. And I just so happened to get drafted out here. So, you know, I got my mom out here. I got my sister out here. And it's basically like my new home, man. And it's such a blessing just to be a part of this organization. And, you know, it seems like we're trying to turn things in the right direction. We just got to keep going and keep working with it.
Wow, what a great story. And finally, another great story from last year. When you were called in to take your first team rep in a May OTA, you're not a guy who's going to get nervous. I mean, talking to you right now, I see this. Watching you play, I see this. But you admitted there might have been some nerves because you were going to have to block Dalen Buchanan. What do you remember about that day?
I don't know if it was that day, but I know in camp, Dalen Buchanan actually gave me an AC sprain. Just from full pads and hitting. But really, I just went in there, man, with the mentality that I can play this game. You know, my father always told me, you know, you can play this football game and don't let nobody tell you differently. And I feel like one thing about succeeding in the NFL is confidence. If you don't have that confidence going out in that field that you can make plays and you can impact the game in positive ways, it's really hard to do that, man. You know, you got to always think positive about it. And then when a negative play does happen, you got to have a short-term memory, man, in this NFL league. You know, you can't let the last play get you down. You can't let even if it's a successful play or a successful game, you can't let your head get too high. You just got to stay even keel.
Hey, Chase, finally, that whole point, I mean, the game is so mental, right, at that level. Were you always like that? Did you always have that mindset, or is that something you had to develop? Did you have to learn that? Like, how much of that's wiring, and how much of that is learned behavior?
Really, I credit to Coach Joe Moorhead and Coach Bronner down at Fordham, man. Just those guys got me so right in college with in terms of just the attention to detail and just, like, practice like a pro and the practice habits of just watching film and dissecting the defense, man. It really goes a long ways, you know, because in this league, everyone has tendencies. You know, you just got to find those tendencies and really harp on them. And that's really what I pride myself in terms of the mental aspect of the game. It just makes everything so much easier.
Such a big win for Arizona yesterday. He had a touchdown. He was a three-time All-American at Fordham, the 134th pick overall in 2018, and Arizona's back at it at New York on Sunday. Chase, you just crushed it. Great to have you on the show, man. I appreciate that very much. Let's be sure we do it again.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Chase. Say, ever wonder where your family comes from? Of course, we all do. And you can discover more about your family and learn about their story by combining the Ancestry DNA test with billions of historical family records. This is like the most amazing thing you could do. It's fascinating. Ancestry DNA gives you so much more, too, than just the places you're from. Ancestry connects you to the places in the world where your story started, and they're able to do so by using precise geographic detail and clear-cut historical insights. You can even trace your ancestors' journeys over time, following how and why your family moved from place to place. I mean, that kind of detail. The kind of detail that you can only get by combining DNA results with over 100 million family trees and billions of records to give you more insight into your genealogy and origins. That kind of detail. In other words, Ancestry's unique features and record collections can give a more complete picture of people from your past. Like the events that shaped them, how they made a living, how long they attended a school, and it's so easy to get started. Here's what you do. Go to Ancestry.com/podcast today and get 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. That's Ancestry.com/podcast and get 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Once again, Ancestry.com/podcast. That's Ancestry.com/podcast. So the Yankees absolutely took it to the Astros in Game 1. No, correction. Gleyber Torres took it to the Astros in Game 1. RBI double in the 4th. Bomb in the 6th. 2-run single in the 7th. RBI ground out in the 9th. 3-for-5. Home run. 5 RBI. And he powered the Yankees to a 7-0 win Saturday night. That meant the Astros were essentially in a must-win situation last night. I mean, they could lose Game 2 and fall behind 2-0 in the series, and then head back to New York. But then you'd have to beat a team that never beats itself. 4 out of 5 games. I wouldn't recommend that. In other words, the stakes could not have been any higher. And their starting pitcher, Justin Verlander, knew it. So did Yankees manager Aaron Boone. That's why Boone came to get his starter, James Paxton, after only 7 outs. You know, maybe he was tipping pitches, maybe not. But Boone was not going to leave anything to chance. I mean, he wasn't terrible, but Houston scored 1 run in the bottom of the 2nd to take the lead. Then they had a pair of 1-out singles in the 3rd. In the regular season, you say, that's fine. That's good. Let him stay out there. Let him work through it. But in the postseason, with Verlander as the opposing number, there's no margin for error. So you come and get Paxton. You turn it over to the bullpen, and that worked. Chad Green ended the threat in the 3rd. And then Aaron Boone kept the Yankees in it in the 3rd. And Aaron Judge put them ahead in the 4th.
Swung on and hit in the air to right center and deep. Back goes Maristic. And the ball is gone over the right center field wall in the deepest part of right center. It's a Judgian blast. A 2-run mammoth home run by Judge.
Yankees radio. It's a big dude hitting a big bomb. 2-1 Yankees. And at that point, it was pretty clear that was going to be a battle. I mean, a long battle. Neither side giving in at all. George Springer saw the Judge bomb and decided to match it himself in the bottom of the 5th.
Pitch on the way. And Springer hits it well and hits it deep to left center. Failed, and you can kiss that goodbye. Off the community leader signs, and we're tied at 2.
The community leader sign was pretty high up. He hit that one a long way. Tie game. So at that point, it's clear this thing is on a knife's edge. That game was not going to be over anytime soon. And if you did not know it in the bottom of the 5th, you definitely knew it in the top of the 6th. 2 outs. Runners on 1st and 2nd. go ahead and roll this.
Here's the 3-2 as the runners are ready to run the payoff. Lined right to second. Off the glove of Alvarez. Coming home is LeMayu. The throw, they got him. The ball was lined off the glove of Altuve. LeMayu came home, and he was thrown out by a wide margin.
Wow. That was amazing. That ball caromed off of, quote, Alvarez.
Off the glove of Alvarez.
Anyway, Carlos Correa, man, pure magic. Magic. Unbelievable play. And I've got no problem with sending the runner home in that situation because after that bounce, you're going to need a perfect throw home to get him. And that's exactly what that was. Not just a perfect throw, but one that was measured at 87 miles per hour. So, like, it's having the foresight to be coming over from short, coming over to shade, even to be in position to make that throw and cut down the runner at home was incredible. Like, everything had to go right, and he had to know exactly what was going to happen, or at least anticipate what was going to happen, and he did.
So as soon as I knew that it was going to catch Altuve in between, I was creeping over. When he hit him and I saw the ball go my way, I just went after it and I grabbed it. And when I looked up and I saw he was sending the runner, I was like, oh, I got this guy. So I threw him out. I don't know why he sent him, but thank you.
I don't know why they sent him, but thank you. Again, I know why they sent the runner. Everybody was doing everything they could to try to scratch out that run. The Yankees thought they had a run. They knew it was going to take a perfect play to get the runner at the plate. And that's exactly what that was. That was like a season's worth of emotion in one single play. Listen to Justin Verlander's take.
It went from crap to we got this guy. We got an extra out. It was just incredible.
It was incredible. And here's the thing about that. It was not just that it was absolute perfection from a 6'4" shortstop. It's that it was a reminder of how good Carlos Correa is. This guy's an absolute star. Injuries have robbed him and even us of that recently. But when this guy's right, he can do things on the field that pretty much nobody else can do. On the field. And he can do things at the plate as well, which I'll get to in a minute. But there was still plenty from both sides to grip about before getting to that point. The pitchers from each team were rolling in from the bullpen and dealing. It's a reminder of how exciting and how tense October baseball can be, even when teams are not scoring. One of my favorite moments last night was that cut that Alex Bregman took on that 3-0 count in the bottom of the 10th. Look, I don't play favorites, but given where this guy started and what he's accomplished and how he handles himself, Alex Bregman is one of my all-time favorite athletes. I mean, I'm going to own that. I said it. I love the guy. Pound for pound, one of the greatest gamers I have ever seen in any sport. Hell, this guy was swinging 3-0 if he liked it. Hell, yes, he was. And damn near came out of his shoes, hacking. He puts a barrel on that one, and that thing is still flying. But that's not the only moment like that. You had Gary Sanchez in that 10-pitch at bat with two on in the top of the 11th. If that stress was getting to be too much, and it was starting to look like that game would never, ever end, no worries, because look who's back. The big dog, Carlos freaking Correa. In the bottom of the 11th, J-Hap, VCC, roll it.
Outfield shaded the other way, and deep, first pitch. And Correa lines it deep to right field. Judge is going back at the wall, looking out. See you later! See you later! See you later! See you later! Astros even the series at a game apiece on the walk-off home run by Carlos Correa in the bottom of the 11th.
The Astros radio. Man, that was a rocket. You ever hear a home run sound like that? Ever hear a home run sound like that? How about the insane Astros crowd making that house shake like that after 5 hours of crazy stress? I mean, that was amazing. There was nothing fluky about that. Correa went up there with a plan.
Going into that last inning, I told Altuve, I got this. I feel like I got this. And I had the right approach against him. I've been successful against him going the other way, and that's what I try to do. I saw a good pitch down the middle, and I drove the other way.
So not only did he drive it the other way and go oppo, he called his shot. Bregman said he called his shot. Quote, I mean, he knew he was going to end it when the pitching change came in, he told us, then he did it, end quote. You know, of course, the oldest cliche in the baseball book is the guy who makes a huge play in the field and then five innings and a few hours later, he ends the game in the bottom of the 11th. If you've seen that once, you've seen that 1,000 times. The actual truth is Correa didn't just win that game. He changed that series. Instead of Houston going to New York down 2-0, they're going there tied up at a game apiece with Gerrit Cole on the mound for game 3. Not Ritt. It's Cole. It's Cole. If you've got Cole on the mound and you've got Correa getting into a rhythm at the plate, man, look the hell out. One of the best games I've ever seen in my life. That was amazing.
I don't know why he sent them, but thank you.
I don't know why you sent him, but thank you. Quote, I don't know why you pitched me, but thank you. Carlos Correa, if you need him.
Thank you.
Lawrence Guy is my guest. Lawrence, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Good. Good, man. I'm great. All right, so you're coming off a win on Thursday, and your next game is Monday. Let me start right there. When you get a little bit of extra time in season, how do you go about approaching it? For instance, do you get the chance to relax and recover, or because you and your wife have two young kids, do you spend all your time with the fam? How do you use that time?
You know, you do the best to recover and have a lot of the family time. But that, you know, that works itself in hand-to-hand. It's my recovery time is pretty much doing a whole bunch of dancing in the living room with my daughter and just trying to make sure that she knows she's the only princess in the world, nobody else. And just ease of mind, get away from football for like a day or two, just catch up on the games on Sunday and just fully dive back into it. So that's the best part of having these games from Sunday to Monday. You got that little extra, I want to say, not say bye week, but it's kind of got that feel of, hey, you got a couple more days to recover before you go to this. But then again, on the backhand of that, you got a Monday to a Sunday game. So you understand that's a short recovery. So just you do it as much as you can so far until you get to that long haul.
Patriots defensive lineman Lawrence Guy is my guest. Listen, I'm curious. Like, we know how we all spend our Sundays. We know how we watch games. But if you've got a Sunday off and you're going to get in front of the TV, how do you spend the Sunday? What's it like for you to watch games around the league? How do you do it?
You know, it's part of that, hey, I'm going to make my recovery time if I got any treatment or anything around those game times. And it pretty much is. You know, watching film for me is different than everybody else, like than local fan. Let's say for players, because everyone wants to hear the broadcast and all that. Me, I'm just looking at certain situations, formations, players' tendencies, or how they're running, how's the team doing, who's out, who's not out, and stuff like that. So I work that around my treatment times, or I work that around that time, so I could like, okay, I can just knock this out and just watch the games I need to watch. And other than that, just enjoy watching former teammates, friends play, and just try to minimize the distraction that I give my child when she's like, "What is this on TV? This ain't Peppa Pig," and I'm like, "Yeah, it's not." So just have to commercial just tune back and forth.
Daddy's still working. Lawrence Guy joining us. All right, so as the team, you're off to a 6-0 start. The defense is getting a ton of run as one of the best, if not the best, during Bill Belichick's time in New England. When did you first start to get the sense that this defense could be really, really good?
You know, as a defense, we're still improving. It's not a set of stone or who we are. Every week that we try to improve on what we can improve, and we hold each other to a high caliber. So we're not coming in like, oh, we're going to be the best. We are the best. No, we're coming in with still that chip on the shoulder saying we need to continue to make plays and to continue to shut down the run, continue to shut down the pass, continue to make turnovers. Because you try to play a high caliber at every single game, and that's what we do. We want to play at a high caliber. We want to people to understand that we're going to come in and play the most physical game that we can play, and we're going to study like it, and we're going to practice like it. But coming in as you see on Sundays with the defense, how we play, and we're playing at a great level, this shows you how we're truly getting it done in practice with the scout team and everything, that we're having good competition, that we're actually competing every day, we're trying to get better every day in practice, and it shows up on film on Sunday.
We're talking to Lawrence Guy. You know, when you lay it out like that, that approach of constantly improving, trying to get better every single day, is something that you embody, but it really is something that the entire team embodies. As an example, the usual thing is if guys win a Super Bowl, maybe everybody gets happy, maybe they let their guard down a little bit. It seems like you guys actually double down or buckle down even more. How do you explain that?
Well, do you want to look at it like this? And this is how I think about it, and this is how the team approaches it. Nobody's happy with one Super Bowl. Nobody's happy with two. This franchise has gotten six in the last two decades. So it's consistently like nobody wants to just have one. He wants to continue to be at a high caliber, continue to peak for the chance to play every single year. And the success of the last decade that this organization has proven it. They don't just have to go to one AFC championship. They won't go to another one, not to one Super Bowl, but go to another one. Because most kids are like, we won the Super Bowl, we're happy, we're done. No, it's like, we won the Super Bowl, we're happy, how do we go back? Or when we lost the Super Bowl, like, man, we just lost it. Now we got to get back and see if we can compete again. It's never, you can't be satisfied with one. You can't be satisfied if you won or lost or won those games. It has to be continuing to try to get back to it. And that's the whole state of mind. If you take it game by game, and you can take it like we need to win each and every game, doesn't matter who we face, then you understand, then you have that caliber. Like, we were looking for something bigger. But that's how we take it. We take it a game by game, and that's the only way you can approach this league. Because if you think too far ahead of like, oh, we're destined to go, you're not going to go, because it doesn't matter who you're playing. That's another good team, another great players out there playing to get you, and it's going to be who has it more on that Monday night or Sunday night, Thursday night game to win. And that's how you do it. Like, we take it game by game, and we're going to compete to a high level, and hopefully we get back. The next one, and the next one, and the next one.
We're talking to Patriots defensive lineman Lawrence Guy for a few more moments. You know, you and I have talked about your journey in the past, and you made the point that when you first arrived in the league, your goal was to make it 4 years. Yet now, here you are in your ninth year, which is more than just about everyone who ever steps on an NFL field. So when you look back on where your career started to where you are right now, as a Super Bowl champ, as a leader on this team, what kind of thoughts do you have?
You know, this resilience of how hard work truly pays off. Like you said, my whole goal was to get to 4 years. I was in and out of teams, so it was one of those situations like you don't know what's happening. The average football for D linemen, we don't make it more than three. So to make it four is a blessing. And every year after that, it's just more and more of a blessing. And as you look back and see what I've been through, it made me develop who I am as a player. It actually made me have these skill sets so I can sit here and help young athletes coming in to improve what their knowledge is and to push them a little bit harder. And those guys that are on practice squads that are just got released or this, I can give them that momentum. Like, I've been there. I understand. I went through that. I was on the practice squad. I got released. I did all that, but I continue to fight, and this is where I'm at. It doesn't matter what situation that you was in, you can get yourself out of that if you continue to work hard and to push yourself. And I got the year nine, you know, and I'm looking for another 6-7 years to go. So every year I'm like, I'm going to keep challenging myself and challenge myself to make sure I get to that next goal that I have.
Lawrence Guy joining me. So when you're telling these younger guys this is what it takes, this is how you have to study, this is how you have to work, this is how you have to be detail-oriented, this is how you have to push yourself, who was a guy or two that taught you those very same things when you first got in?
You know, Corey Redding was one of them. When I got to Indianapolis, he brought me aside. He's like, this is what you need to do. And he really pushed me to do it. Then I had Jared Johnson when I got to San Diego, real good, hard-nosed player that most people don't really know about. Like, if you knew who he was, you understood the knowledge he had. Then when I got to Baltimore, Terrell Suggs and Holody really pushed me to continue to fight. But Terrell Suggs really helped me out with how I wrote my notes down and made sure I got the knowledge I needed to have. and Clarence Brooks was my D-line coach in Baltimore. And he pretty much just told me the truth. He's like, hey, your destiny is in your own hands, and nobody else can tell you what you can and cannot do. All you could do is determine what you put out there on that field, and nobody else. Nobody, doesn't matter how many reps you get, doesn't matter none of that. It's all about you. And it's one of those coaches that truly kept it real with you to the point of, like, if you have any concerns, I could tell you what's going on. I could tell you what the organization is saying. So if you, I could tell you what we're doing. And through those years I was there with him, he kept her 100% with me, and it truly helped me develop as a player. And I already knew the ins and outs of the league due to my situation before, and it's actually helped me grow and getting a note taken down and that whole process. So when I got to New England, I understood how to grind already, understood what I need to do and how to pretty much study film, write notes, and continue to improve.
Lawrence Guy, my guest. All right, really quickly, and I say the important stuff for last. When you and I talk, we talk about football, obviously, and then we talk about other things. You're an extremely well-rounded guy with lots of things going on. You've got three dogs now, Chewy, Bubbles, yes, and Pinot. Break them down for me. What is each dog like, and who is the member of the family that each dog likes the most?
Chewy is my first, and he looks like the little Chewbacca's on the planet Chewbacca, like a little Jabberwocky. So that's what he looks like, and everybody loves him. He's furry, he's fun, and it's my Maltese Lhasa Apa. Then we got Pinot. He's my toy Maltese. Like, it's one of those dogs. You like, everybody's like, hey, he's so amazing. Can I hold him? I'm like, he's not on the couch, and all of a sudden look over, he's on the couch. I'm like, do you have my dog in your purse? And I'm like, no. I'm like, yeah, you got my dog in your purse. You can take him out.
Great.
Then we got Bubbles is everybody's favorite. I've never met, that's my bully pit bull. I never met anybody, any kid, any non-dog lover that didn't love that dog. She is super friendly. We used to take her to schools when I used to talking to inner city schools. We used to take her to Boys and Girls Clubs and have her interact with people or babies and everything. That's my daughter's dog now. She took full advantage of that. And she, like, no matter what you do, that she could do no wrong to that dog. Like, she loves him, her and her. They just love each other. So it's one of those situations where I'm like, hey, we were born to be best friends.
Lawrence, those are three really different dogs, right? How did you settle on those three dogs?
You know, this adoption and rescue process, it's not about, I didn't look at it like, oh, this is what it is. Like, you and your dog connect, and once you get that connection through your dog, it's unique, you know. And I knew once I got the first one, the second, the third one, we just connected. We just had this bond, like best friend. But like I said, I just knew through the process, I knew these were going to be great children dogs, and that they were going to love my kids, and my kids were going to love them. And so far, it's worked out. They all love each other, and we all have this big, happy family.
And like I said, we talk about football, and we talk about things that are not football-related. He is a Super Bowl champion. 9 years in now, the Patriots are 6-0. They've got the best record in the NFL, and they are at the Jets on Monday. Lawrence Guy back in the jungle. Lawrence, I appreciate you. Great to have you back on. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Lincoln, Nebraska, Geoff. What's up, Geoff?
What's up, Romy? Happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Hey, just a quick take for our boy, Garrett Rich. I've got a little something for his elderly earth. Rich's back is aching. Ooh. Arthritic fingers. Ooh. He was drooling out his mouth. Ike's back is aching. Ooh. Reaction.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that car.
I don't like that car.
Good night now!